Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
All right, and welcome back to the Steve Carsey and the Kid show. I am the Kid. He is Steve Carsey, a very tired Steve Carsey. Been working hard, doing this thing, waking up 5 a.m. or probably earlier every single day, working very long days. Spring training is upon us. Well, actually, spring training is here already. And then we have the regular seasons, no longer months away, Steve, but we can safely say it's less than a month away. So we're in the weeks and days away from the start of the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's getting into the middle of spring. Teams are starting to shape up. Some teams are starting to make cuts and send some of the younger guys down, and trying to round out their teams and get the best team ready to start the season. And it's still one of those things where there are a lot of competitions up in the air in many camps, and we'll see how that shakes out as things start to wind down here in the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. And we have some news to report, some funny news, but we also have a special guest tonight. Steve, you want to tell the folks who we have coming up?
Yeah, Jerry Kramzik of ESPN. He will be our guest here, fairly shortly after we touch on a few teams, and we're excited to have him. We're looking forward to diving in on a few questions and letting him expand on a few topics and let the viewers hear what great insight he has.
Mm-hmm. And Jerry Krasnick of ESPN.com, baseball writer there, and also for Baseball America, the latest in a long line of great guests that we've had on the show. We appreciate all the guests coming on and all the support they've given us. We are going to be talking about the NL Central tonight, a beefy division. We had three 97-win teams there, two wild card teams last year with the Pirates and the Cubs, and the lone 100-win team in baseball, the St. Louis Cardinals, who by all rights had no business being a 100-win team if you really look at what happened and what transpired. Losing Adam Wainwright for majority of the season, Matt Adams going down, a slew of injuries. You had a lot of inconsistent play. You had Matt Holliday with nagging injuries year-round. Just an amazing team, what they were able to do. And Matt Carpenter was their offensive MVP. We'll get into that. Let's talk about a little bit of news, a little bit of stuff going on. Some of it NL Central related, some of it baseball related. We have David Freese being a late pickup and signed with the Pirates, which is an interesting deal there, Steve. It's a kind of a low-risk deal. It's a one-year contract for the Pirates. Gives them a little bit of depth. What do you think about that move?
Yeah, it's another veteran presence that they get to add to their club for, relatively low value, $3 million deal. Gives him a good glove there at third base, and just some veteran presence within that lineup. A guy who's been there, done that. MVPs in the playoffs, and a good addition to a club that is looking to contend in a tough division.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a very tough division, as already alluded to. You have David Carpenter trying to rebuild himself and signing a minor league deal with the Tampa Bay Rays. You have El Toro, Pedro Alvarez, formerly of the Pittsburgh Pirates. They didn't want to put up with his antics anymore. And he's actually going to Baltimore, signing a one-year $5.75 million deal. Baltimore being pretty active this year, letting Wei and Chen go, but making some other moves, Steve. They're a lot more active than they've been.
Yeah, they're definitely active on the offensive side of the coin there. They've done some things to boost their lineup. Obviously bringing Davis back and putting him in the middle, but Pedro Alvarez in that ballpark can be very, very dangerous. And I think that really gives them a different dynamic within that lineup. Being able to split up a couple left-handed hitters, mixing in Adam Jones between maybe him and Alvarez. Alvarez is probably going to DH. For the most part, and he'll see some time at first base, but as much as they can keep him off the field with some defensive problems that he has in fielding, that they'll be better off.
Mm-hmm. We have some other news, again, some NL Central, some not. You have Walt Jocketty of the Reds saying that he expects a quick turnaround with that team. Now, again, they traded twice Aroldis Chapman this offseason, if you're on the white twice, it's because they trade him to the Dodgers or had agreed in principle to a trade to the Dodgers, but of course all the off-field issues going on, which ultimately resulted in a 30-game suspension without pay. He ends up going to the Yankees, and what I believe is going to be a great transaction for the Yankees. You have Matt Cain slated to make his spring training debut. Hopefully, Steve, we see him get back on his footing. He was fun to watch, but a very solid pitcher for a long time. Integral piece in their winning ways, you know, three of the last five. Not so much in the last one, but certainly before that, definitely that veteran presence, a guy that's been there forever. He's done a lot of great things with that team. Even when he wasn't winning games, he was still giving them great performance. So it was kind of hard to see him go down the way he's been over the last couple of years.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who you hope bounces back and can maintain and possibly get his stuff back that he once was prior to, you know, having, you know, the Tommy John and, you know, some other surgeries that he had to go through this past offseason. You just don't know what you're going to get from Matt Cain when he comes back. That's why they went out and signed, you know, Samardzija and Cueto for being the top of the rotation type of guy with Bumgarner. So, you know, we wish the best for Matt Cain. We hope he comes back. You know, if he does and he's anything near what he was prior to these injuries, that'll be a big boost for that starting rotation.
Mm-hmm. And Johnny Peralta requiring thumb surgery, returned back to the Cardinals camp. Of course, he will be out for a little while, but gives him a little bit of boost to see his presence there. You have the Phillies, Mikhail Franco, blasting his sixth home run of spring training. Do with that information what you will, but he's looking good. He looked good last year, too. We'll end up seeing what he does during the regular season. We have Jonathan Papelbon kind of retracing a little bit from all his antics of the past and saying he's not trying to rub people the wrong way. Again, we'll see what ends up happening during the regular season, if he can keep his demeanor in check. We have Danny Salazar, your boy, Carsey. He doing his best Wild Thing impression and, you know, trying to do his best Ricky Vaughn and putting on those glasses with the skull and crossbones across the bridge. Really, actually, pretty cool thing. You only see this during spring training.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the guys over here like to have fun. You know, Tito Francona really runs a great camp and, you know, he lets guys, you know, be themselves and, you know, have a lot of fun. And that's why I think the team is able to play loose and be ready when things, you know, when games come about.
Yep, absolutely. So with that, that will wrap up the news now for now. There's still some more things in there, including Max Scherzer ending syrup. Chocolate syrup celebrations. Yes, that is news because celebrations are a big part of the game, especially after the game and as good as Max Scherzer has been. But let's talk about the NL Central for now. We have Jerry Krasnick of ESPN.com and of Baseball America coming on shortly. So we had some news come out, and now let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers will be the first team we speak about when we in the NL Central. So Not a lot to speak about here, Steve. That's partially why we let off with them. The team still has a lot of talent on there, but a lot of shakiness. You don't know what you're going to get out of Ryan Braun. They traded Gene Segura, ended up picking up Aaron Hill and some money in that deal. But they brought in Chris Carter, which is strikeout mania. Kirk Nieuwenhuis off waivers, Will Middlebrooks, who's really faded the last few years, and Jonathan Villar in the trade. They lost Adam Lind and Francisco Rodriguez as well. So you have a team that, outside of Ryan Braun and Jonathan Lucroy, there's really not much there anymore. I mean, there's really not much to be said beyond that. I'm sure they're going to start moving up some of those pieces, including Jonathan Lucroy. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, you know, they're in rebuilding mode. You know, their pitching staff right now, I think, really doesn't have too much leadership on it. They got a lot of young guys who are trying to find their way and do what they need to do and establish themselves in the big leagues. You know, as you mentioned, they traded away Francisco Rodriguez and quite a few other players. You know, Segura. You know, Jonathan Lucroy and Ryan Braun, Aaron Hill, that's going to be the meat of your lineup in the middle. And there's going to have to be guys that are in front of them and behind them that produce, that are going to help this team, you know, try to win as many games as they can in that awful tough Central, with the Pirates, the Cubs, and the Cardinals. I think it's going to be a tough go for them, and their pitching staff will take some lumps, but in the end, they understand that it's a rebuilding process, and it's going to take probably 2 to 4, 2 to 5 years to get these young guys where they need to be, and hopefully to the point where they can compete and get back to a competitive ball club.
Mm-hmm. And that's if the other teams in the division even let them get to that point, because you have all these teams adding. These are big money teams. They're adding a lot of talent. We'll be talking more in depth about the Pirates and the Cubs and the Cardinals, but these are big market teams, obviously. Not that Milwaukee small, but it's not to the degree of the other teams mentioned. And we've seen how their winning ways have taken them, the players that they have at their core. They're frontline guys. I don't consider Ryan Braun that guy, especially now after everything that's gone on and his body breaking down. This is a team that's going to have to show a lot. They're going to have to spend a lot over time. But again, it's nothing there. And it seems like no matter what Francisco Rodriguez does last year, again, another great year for him. But just seems like every year it's like, where's he going to pitch? He's 34 years old. He's been in the majors for 14 years already. He had 9.8 strikeouts per nine innings last year, 1-3 record, 2.21 ERA, which is below his career average of 2.69, pitching 60 games and 57 innings pitched, 62 strikeouts, and a whip that's way below one at 0.86, which is, again, about 30 points below his career, 1.14. So he had, by all rights, an amazing season and his lowest ERA in a long time. And, I mean, it seems like no matter what, he can't find a stable home. Now, going to Detroit, where he's going to be joined by Justin Wilson and a revamped situation out there in Detroit.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who, obviously has bounced around and been with some different ball clubs. Continues to put up good numbers. I think pitching the American League will be a little bit different than pitching in Milwaukee in the National League. Not nearly as much pressure in Milwaukee as he will have in Detroit. And, again, a tough AL Central that he's going to have to continuously face, and a very good American League all around. The AL East will have its ball clubs, it has its lineups, and it's going to be tough closing games out for him in Detroit, but I'm curious to see what happens. And, it'll be one of those things where if he's able to put up the numbers he did last year, then Detroit's going to be in a very good position and have made a very good move by acquiring him.
Mm-hmm. And they've been desperate to try to shore up that back end of the bullpen for a long time. Of course, everything going on with Joe Nathan, who's trying to find his way back and still show that he's got stuff. But Francisco Rodriguez going to Detroit in that move. Again, 300 – well, not again. I just want to say, by the way, for Francisco Rodriguez, 386 career saves. Doesn't mean he becomes a Hall of Famer just by that, but lifetime 10.8 strikeouts per nine. And I mentioned a bunch of other stats before. Definitely one of the greatest closers of all time. Whether you like his personality or anything like that, you can't dispute what he's been able to do on the field. Career single season saves record of 62 back in 2008, now finding his home in Detroit. So with that, we do have our special guest calling in. He will be calling in within the next 30 seconds or so. So we'll get into a little bit of news before we get into our next team, because it'll require a little more time. So let's talk about the news of Max Scherzer ending Chocolate Surf celebrations. And Steve, you've been a part of quite a few celebrations during your day, these guys are under a lot of pressure. You're under a lot of pressure. You want to just let loose sometimes. They do the shaving cream. They do the pie in the face, so to speak. There's a lot of different ways to celebrate. Some of them sticky and gross. Some of them a little more delicious. But what do you think about this kind of stuff? Are you a fan of it or no?
I think it's okay. But I think it becomes more of a safety issue with guys and different things that guys are getting paid a lot of money to stay on the field, and nobody wants one of their stars getting hurt, with some kind of celebration. There'll still be celebrations going on behind closed doors when guys, hit a walk-off and get up into the clubhouse. But I think that, the stuff being curtailed on the field will be very beneficial to guys.
Yeah, and people see that, and again, that's why I said it is news because of that. A lot of people don't see the health aspect to it, or the health health and well-being of the player in that sense. Again, that they can get hurt on this. Sometimes the guys don't know their strength. We saw what happened with Kendry Morales several years back with that walk-off grand slam and tearing his ACL. So, again, not everybody's fragile. Not everybody goes that way. I'm not saying cut out celebrations, and neither is Steve, but I guess there are ways to be doing that. And, again, it's a business now, and we always have to remember that. At the end, at the core, it is a game, but it's also a business, and a very profitable one and lucrative one at that. So with that, we have our special guest of the night calling in. He's actually on the line with us now, Jerry Krasnick of ESPN.com and of Baseball America. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Sure. How are you?
Doing very well. You're an eager last night. You ended up giving me a call. I'm like, oh, we could do it tonight. We could have had the interview tonight, but it just didn't work out, obviously. So we do appreciate you being able to be flexible with your schedule and coming on the show tonight.
You're welcome.
So I'll lead it off, of course, with everything going on with Goose Gossage and everything last week and Bryce Harper and his comments. We can focus on that a little bit if you want to touch on that. What I want to know is something that you tweeted about before, and it's a story of David Dahl. And a lot of people don't know about this, but I'm glad that you tweeted about it before. So I'd like for you to take us through this guy's journey, Rockies outfielder, everything that he's been through, and him working his way back to the majors.
Yeah, this is a kid who was a first-round pick of the Rockies out of high school in Alabama. He was the 10th pick in the draft a few years ago, and one of their top prospects, top 50 prospect in baseball. And last year was playing in a game in New Britain, Connecticut, playing center field, ran in and caught a ball and collided with a teammate, very violent collision. Got spun around and knocked to the ground. He got kneed in the midsection, essentially. And he wound up coming off the field, and they didn't realize it at the time, but he had lacerated his spleen, which is a pretty bad injury, obviously. A few football players have had it. It's probably less common in baseball. And had to be rushed by ambulance to a hospital in Hartford, Connecticut, and had emergency surgery to stop the bleeding. And then 3 days later, had a choice. They said, look, you can wait, let the spleen heal, but it's going to take 3 to 6 months. You're probably going to miss most of the season, and you might be susceptible to injuring it again if you get, if you dive into first base or run into a wall or whatever. And the other option was having the spleen surgically removed, which he decided was the best course of action for him, and he had it removed. The spleen, for people who don't know, is an organ that filters blood. It's a big factor in the immune system. It's a blood-filtering organ. And so he is more vulnerable to things like pneumonia, viral infections and that sort of thing. So he has to go in and get vaccinations and shots, and he's okay with it right now, but made sort of a major sacrifice, and he's back in Rockies camp this spring and attracting a lot of attention. Very good player, and really could be a big piece of that organization for years to come.
And certainly a fighter as well.
Yeah,
yeah,
hey,
Jerry,
it's a tough thing to do.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, Jerry, Steve Carsey here. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it and taking the time. So, I guess I wanted to get a quick your thoughts on what essentially will be an appeal by Henry Mejia of the Mets and his lifetime ban. And then also just want you maybe to talk a little bit about, you know, how it came about, or if you know how he got caught three times in basically a year's span to get this lifetime ban.
Yeah, I don't really know the specifics of it. I mean, obviously, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I mean, for three times,
Yeah, nobody's fooled at that point.
You can't do much worse than that. So, I don't know the whys and wherefores of it. I guess he you know, figures at this point. It's worth a shot. You know, he doesn't really have any other recourse, you know, unless he wants to accept the punishment. But I got to think it's kind of grim. I mean, I don't know what real defense he has. I think he said, what, there was some sort of a conspiracy against him or something. I don't know what angle he's going to come at it from, but it sounds to me like it's probably going to be a long shot.
Mm. And we're speaking with Jerry Krasnick of ESPN.com and Baseball America, awesome writer, tons of followers on Twitter for a reason. I love following you. I mentioned one of your tweets before, and just the story about David Dahl. I appreciate you not only tweeting that, but of course sharing that on the show. You've been tweeting about the NL Central teams, obviously a very prominent division in baseball, one of the toughest, had two 90-loss teams, and then you had three 97-win teams there, so kind of feast and famine, the haves and the have-nots, so to speak. So you have two teams that are in a rebuilding mode. Walt Jocketty thinks the Reds are going to be a quick turnaround, which is very hard to ever say or predict. We know there are three teams that are not in turnaround right now. We have the Cardinals, who just somehow find a way to get it done, whether it's Tony La Russa or Mike Matheny, doesn't seem to matter. You have the Cubs, who are not only just on the rise, just look outright dominant on paper right now. And you have the Pirates, who's the last several years just seem to find a way to get it done. And they're a little bit of a different look this year as well. So I'd like to get your take on the NL Central and how much it's changed over the last couple of years from being kind of a boring division to being probably the most prominent division to keep an eye on. You have three perennial playoff teams, and all three did go to the playoffs last year, too, as a wild card.
Yeah, you kind of summarized it there, obviously. I mean, the Cardinals are sort of a signature franchise when it comes to continuity, bringing guys up on the farm, making smart moves without going too crazy. You know, this was a team that, remember back a few years ago, you know, do they keep Albert Pujols? And they made the tough decision to let him go, and then when you look at it in hindsight, with him having a 10-year contract and the Angels kind of being saddled with a declining Albert Pujols over the final few years of that deal, the Cardinals have really moved forward. And obviously last year, you know, winning 100 games, and it was a disappointing finish, but they're really a signature franchise and a franchise that, you know, you never can discount. You know, it seems like when you look at National League teams, there's always probably the Giants and the Cardinals are the teams that really have continuity and great tradition and really know how to get it done in terms of player evaluation and finding guys who fit together and mesh in a clubhouse. So they're kind of the gold standard, I guess, in that division. But then you look at the Cubs. I mean, I was out there at their camp, and it's pretty amazing when you look at the array of young talent they have. Joe Maddon, you know, it seemed like every day I was out there, he had something going on, whether it was Munenori Kawasaki doing karaoke or popping out of a van or having a 70s retro day. You know, he's a guy who...
Yeah, he's really unique, isn't he?
Yeah, you can see, you know, he really breaks up the monotony, and I think he understands that when it's fun for guys, you know, it makes baseball less like drudgery, and he really is great in terms of reading the mood of his clubhouse and keeping it loose. And obviously, great young talent, you know, a lot of really good young players, and they've complemented it by going out and spending some money, obviously, on John Lester and Jason Hayward. You know, I think the question is going to be, how are they going to deal with huge expectations? His motto is embrace the target, you know, so he wants them to accept it and say, hey, people are going to expect a lot from us, you know, hoping we can finally win that World Series, but let's embrace it and have fun with it. So two huge teams, and obviously you mentioned the Pirates, who have really done a nice turnaround too and have had the misfortune of going into the postseason and, you know, not getting through that wild card game, but certainly a team you can't discount.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to shift gears a little bit and just change leagues, but stay in the Central. I know you've been covering spring training a little bit, and, you know, the AL Central has, you know, quite a few teams that seem to be looking to make some noise. I mean, obviously you have last year's World Series champion, the Royals. They've made some moves, you know, adding some pieces. you know, the Indians, the Detroit, and I guess we could talk a little bit about the White Sox, and you can give us some insight and how you think things are going to shake out this year, you know, when the season starts in the AL Central.
Yeah, you know, and you really don't want to completely exclude Minnesota either. You know, that's a team that kind of made a run at a wild card last year under Paul Molitor and really played well and has a good group of young players. So, you know, I think the Royals you have to look at, obviously, is the team to beat in that division. Great sort of team dynamic that they have. You know, a main solid core of young guys with Hosmer and Kane and Moustakas and Sal Perez. But, you know, they've made some really smart sort of strategic additions, and we'll see this year if Ian Kennedy's the guy who can step in, you know, and do well in that big park with those outfielders behind him. Detroit's a team that really kind of loaded up when you look at Justin Upton and Jordan Zimmerman and, you know, adding to what they had. They really have a potentially really strong run-scoring lineup, and Cleveland has pitching, and the White Sox have Todd Frazier and Brett Laurie and some new catchers, and they're a team that was a disappointment last year. So this is one division where really you look at all five teams and you say, hey, they could be decent. So, you know, I think Kansas City obviously is going to be the favorite, and Detroit's probably, you know, after that. But the other teams are going to be dangerous.
Jerry, I got one other thing that I want to talk about here, and it's something that you tweeted about back on March 1st, something I want to ask you too, and just going through your Twitter timeline, I had seen it, I missed it when you had posted it originally, but it's about the DH and the long conversation, very hard conversation to have with certain people because they get their hearts and emotions, they roll their sleeves up and they start wanting to fight and argue about it. And it's something that comes up every year. It's something that comes up almost every week if you really think about it, when the pitcher gets hurt running the bases or you see a DH doing big things and somebody says, well, maybe we should have that in the NL, dot, dot, dot. Joe Maddon, who's been in the American League for a long time, of course, managed the Tampa Bay Rays very successfully, had the DH there. He said, I love the National League game. It's pure baseball, the essence of baseball. It's much more cerebral. This is from your article, quoting Joe Maddon. I would hate for us to take away all that nuance and just plop a DH in there. Being in the corner of the dugout, I can tell you this, there's a lot more to think about. We've seen and heard that from a lot of people, Joe Girardi when he was with the Marlins and him making the shift to the AL where he was more familiar as a player but also played with the Rockies and other teams. So he knows both sides as well, but it's a very different game. And I think having both is really cool in that sense that going to the American League can extend some careers, but you still have the historic element, which is pure baseball, which is the National League.
Yeah, it's funny. I decided to do that piece. They have a thing in Arizona. It's media day, you know, where they have all 50 general managers and managers. There's 30 people. And I said, this is always sort of a hot button topic. And why not ask these guys when they're all in one place? And, you know, I wasn't really sure what kind of response I would get. So a couple things struck me, I guess. One is that the guys like Maddon or Mike Socha or Bruce Bochy, they really do seem to enjoy that National League style, you know, and having to make the decision of whether to, you know, go to the pinch hitter and then do the double switches and use your bench and all that sort of stuff. I know there's a contrary argument. Bob Melvin mentioned it. He said, you know, that in the American League, you don't have the decision made for you. It's not forced upon you. So you actually have to know when your pitcher is done or when he isn't. But most managers, I think, do enjoy that chess game. I like the National League style. Granted, a lot of people hate watching a pitcher hit. I do get that. But on the other hand, you know, we've seen guys through the years like Madison Bumgarner now or
Dontrell Willis.
Or, you know, a lot of guys like that who can really help themselves. And the one thing that I found, I guess, that surprised me a little bit was just most people don't mind there being a schism between the two leagues. You know, I think the sense is they've gotten sort of homogenous now and know, they play each other all the time. You have the same umpires. You don't have league presidents. So there's really no definition between the leagues. But that's the one thing that really does distinguish them, you know, is one league has the pitcher hit and the other league doesn't. And, you know, it certainly comes into play in the postseason when you get to the World Series and you start to say, hey, in the different parks, the managers have to adjust their lineups. But, you know, I think most people don't mind it, and I don't really mind it. If they stay the way it is, I don't think that's such a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think it adds a lot of different elements to the game. And a great piece that you wrote, of course, always a great way to start a Royal Rumble amongst amongst very passionate players, coaches, but certainly a great question to have. Who knows if the game changes down the road? But Rob Manfred's one of those guys who had had an opinion and quickly retracted that opinion because of the response that you get. So always going to be a hot-button issue until there's a change, and then there's going to be an even hotter button issue because something's changed. But Jerry, thank you so much for coming on tonight, for sure, sharing your thoughts about the NL Central and everything going on with baseball. And, of course, that tweet and that story of David Dahl. Thank you again. Enjoy the rest of spring training, and we can't wait to have you back on.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Have a good night, guys.
Yep. Appreciate it. Thanks,
you too. Thanks, Jerry.
So with that, Steve, we can reshift our focus back to NL Central. Of course, Jerry, great guest, great contributor to the game of baseball from so many different angles. Again, his Twitter handle, I didn't mention it before while he was on the show, but it's at J Krasnick, a must follow, nearly 200,000 followers on Twitter. It's not one of those Turkish or foreign companies, overseas companies that you pay $50 for and you get 100,000 followers in 3 days. That are all fake. Those are all earned and warranted, but anyway, we appreciate him coming on, and we want to shift gears back to the NL Central, and we want to talk about the Cincinnati Reds now. We briefly mentioned them before and some of the changes they had made. Of course, that mega trade, sending him over to the Dodgers, and then subsequently that getting shot down by the league, and then him going to the New York Yankees. And Steve, I don't remember a time where a guy got traded twice in one offseason by the same team. I think we're in unique territory here.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't happen often that teams turn down a trade when they want a guy. There has to be some unusual circumstances, and, you know, that's exactly what happened here. You know, with the domestic violence case coming out against him after the trade was essentially completed, the Dodgers wanted to back out. They didn't know that information was baggage with him, and they didn't want to have to deal with it with their ball club. You know, they got rid of some guys that I think that, you know, helped clean up their ball club and get it a little bit more cohesive, and they just didn't want to do that again, bringing him in. So essentially they just nixed the trade, and, you know, the Yankees were the ones who kind of swooped in and decided to go get him no matter – you know, what issues he was bringing along with him. They were looking at the player and the player only.
Mm-hmm. So you have a team that had a horrible 2015. They ended up trading away their star pitcher, Johnny Cueto. They kind of had to do that. They were never going to re-sign him. Look at their starting rotation right now, or the projected guys competing for the starting rotation right now, the depth chart on CBS Sports. You have 9 guys, 4 of which have a player's injured tag on them, kind of a footnote. You have Devin Mesoraco. You have the perennially hurt Billy Hamilton. He's probable for the start of the season, still with that shoulder. You have him hurt. We have Johnny Votto with all the injuries that he's had in the past. You have Brandon Phillips getting older, not knowing what's going on there, although did have a solid season last year at .294. Power wasn't there. Did have 23 stolen bases, so still serviceable. But as a whole, that team is not what where they should be. When their star guys from a couple of years ago, Tony Cingrani, showed a lot of talent, a lot of hype last year. 33 in the third innings, 5.67 ERA. Strikeout numbers are really the only silver lining there if you're that serial optimist like I am. 39 Ks in 33 innings. This team, potentially, Steve, is a 100-loss squad here after being the 4.33 ERA last year by their pitching staff, was fifth dead last in that division, 12th in the National League, likely going to be dead last in the National League this year when you have guys like Rossy Iglesias, DeScalfani, and no, this, you know, no disrespect to any of these guys, but this is not a major league rotation at this point. Brandon Finnegan, Michael Lorenzen hurt. You have Homer Bailey hurt, and some of the other guys that are out there, like Josh Schmidt, who had a 6.89 ERA last year. You have Kavaius Sampson, 6.54 ERA. I think where I'm getting at, Steve, is that this is a very weak team, and it's not one that we're probably going to talk about a lot during the season, unless it's about them trading another talent, which they did, of course, Aroldis Chapman, Todd Frazier going to the AL Central, Chicago White Sox, and a guy who's a fan favorite, the big-time performance last year in the Home Run Derby, really one of the lone bright spots for Reds fans. You have Joey Votto, Jay Bruce, and Brandon Phillips left. I have a feeling those guys are going to be going too, if not by the All-Star break, probably beforehand.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's like what we talked about with the Milwaukee Brewers. They're in a rebuilding mode. You know, they think it's going to be a quick turnaround, but you know, as you talked about, these guys are getting a little bit older in Votto and Mesoraco and some of the other guys on their infield. Their pitching staff is very young and inexperienced. They're going to have to go through some bumps and bruises and get some lumps of their own to gain some experience and learn how to win. And, you know, I just don't think that's going to happen this year. I think, again, it's one of those things where some of these guys will get traded. They'll still stock up on some more talent, and they'll try to turn this thing around as quick as they can. But, you know, I see this thing as a 2 to 3 year rebuilding process with the Cincinnati Reds, and that's where they're
minimum
at this particular time. Yeah, that's where they're at this particular time, and that's what they have to do. So, you know, that's kind of where they stand, and they understand that. You know, that's the route and the road that they had to go down because of where they're at, and you know, they're just going to have a tough go for it, I think, in 2016.
Yeah, close your eyes and cover your ears if you're a Reds fan. It's not going to be a fun year for you, unfortunately. The other thing is that they have big contracts they have to get out from underneath, like Homer Bailey, Joey Votto, Jay Bruce. These are big-time money guys right here. And Billy Hamilton, even though he's been hurt, he has shown signs that he can steal close to 100 bases. So that kind of speed, that kind of ability, even though you can't steal first base, it does warrant something. So if he can just make a couple tweaks to his game, and of course stay healthy, you're talking about another big money guy. So, you know, the Reds obviously in the big rebuilding mode there. And so, Steve, we'll shift over to the Pittsburgh Pirates now, who finished third in the division by one game. Actually, I think it was the other way around. I think they had the 98 wins, if I'm not mistaken. But they had a great 2015 after a little bit of a rough start there and some of the guys not participating in the offense and in the pitching being a little rough. But then they just continued to march on, got strong, and A.J. Burnett, and what ends up being his true final season, made a good goal with it. They added J.A. Happ, who's incredibly instrumental in them getting to where they got. But it's a different team now. Neil Walker, a favorite of the fans, not there anymore, traded for John Neese, which I think might end up being an okay trade for him, but I would rather have a Neil Walker on my team if I'm them. You have Sean Rodriguez being re-signed, of course, to solidify that infield. They brought in Neftali Feliz, formerly one of the best closers in the game, of course, injury after injury and consistency after consistency, and he's trying to find a home and rebuild who he is. They brought in Brian Vogelsong as well and John Jaso. They lost two guys to retirement, though, Steve. You have A.J. Burnett, who just mentioned, and Aramis Ramirez also retiring. You have Pedro Alvarez that let him walk. Of course, we mentioned him before. He signed with Baltimore for a one-year deal. J.A. Happ going back to Toronto. And Antonio Bastardo, another Pirate of 2015, becoming a Met. So as a whole, they didn't really do much there, but it's hard to go against Neil Huntington and what that front office has been able to do and revive Pittsburgh baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Neil Huntington and those guys in Pittsburgh do a tremendous job. You know, their pitching guys over there seem to rebuild guys and get guys back to what they were once prior to getting hurt or falling off or having lost season. So, you know, they have a lot of reclamation projects, and Not that Nice is one, but I think he's going to thrive in that ballpark. I think he's going to pitch really well with that defense behind him. You know, Vogelsong, everybody counts him out, but years he had in San Francisco really, you know, shaped up that rotation, especially him being a number five guy in that rotation, putting up innings and pitching deep in the game. So I see the Pirates doing what they do. They have the Corey players there. You know, they got McCutcheon, Setter, and guys up the middle that will play well on defense, and I just think these guys are primed again for another run, and it's going to be a wild ride with these three clubs again, you know, fighting for first place in the NL Central.
Yep, and that's what makes baseball great. You have the Pittsburgh Pirates, second in all of baseball, 98 wins, just a truly incredible team. Runs scored, 4.3 runs scored per game. Runs allowed, 3.7 last year, so pretty solid differential there. Just, again, fantastic team, and been able to do some great things over the last few years. Didn't do much in the offseason, but again, it's hard to make too many moves when you have a guy like Josh Harrison who can do everything, and he showed that 2 years ago coming back. You have Francisco Liriano there, Mark Melancon, one of the best closers in the game. You have Gregory Polanco, has not broken out yet, and I think he's going to be a true force this year. I think this is his breakout year. You have Gerrit Cole, one of the best pitchers in the game. You have Andrew McCutcheon, of course, probably arguably the face of baseball, if not one of the top two or three, with Buster Posey maybe there, and of course, Bryce Harper's vying for that position as well, just probably not going about it the right way. And you have Starling Marte, who, if he can cut down those strikeouts, he's an incredible star, an incredible talent. So they have a team that's got a lot there, and they do need to shore up a couple spots in that lineup. Did bring David Fries in. They have Cervelli behind the plate, but they do have a lot of talent there. If they stay healthy, you have guys, the first four guys in your order are all under 30 years old going into the season, and Andrew McCutcheon being the oldest at 29. So again, a team that shouldn't fall apart or break down. They have Michael Morse coming off the bench, Sean Rodriguez, Matt Joy. So you got a lot of veteran presence here too, Steve, not just on the field, but on the bench as well. And again, the projected rotation right now, you have Liriano, Gerrit Cole, probably going to be the other way around. You have John Neese, Ryan Vogelsong, Jeff Locke, who, if he can find himself again, is going to be a great force for that starting rotation, solidify the back end of it. And, of course, you have Mark Melancon there. You have Tony Watson, Jared Hughes, Feliz, if he can find himself again. So you got a lot here that you can play with. And, again, I'm sure they're going to tinker and find some guys along the way, kind of doing it the old Cashman way, finding low-risk guys, one-year deals, minor league contracts, bring them in, and hopefully make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll do what they need to do as the season progresses. They get near the trading deadline, and if they're in it, they'll make some moves for sure. And, you know, I think their rotation will keep them in a lot of games. And pitching and defense, obviously, you know, I talk about it very many times with you and on our show, that if you have those two components and those two pieces, you have a chance to win a lot of games, and that's what they're built around, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yep. Now let's shift over to the only 100-win team in baseball last year, a team that somehow we talked about a week after week after week after week. We beat that dead horse, and it's just incredible that they were able to do 55 wins at home, tied for the most in baseball. The only other team, the Dodgers, had 55 wins. There were some other teams with 53, 51, blah, blah, blah. But they have 55 wins at home and 9 games over on the road to boot. An amazing team. Beat up on right-handed pitchers, 75-44 against right-handed pitchers, and over 500 at 25-18 against lefties. This is a team that's built to play, built to win, and built to sustain throughout the year. And it's just really amazing what they've been able to do, even though they stumbled playing sub 500 ball the last 30 of the year, 14-16. While you had the Cubs going 22-8, you had the Pirates going 19-11 that division. They still had enough of a cushion to win the division by 2 solid games. So again, an amazing team there. And they did make some moves this offseason. I got to say, they did lose John Lackey, who ended up going to the Cubs, who will be our last team. John Jay, who's been with the team since forever, going over. They lost Jason Hayward, who they traded Shelby Miller for back last year, back a year ago now, which ended up being a great trade for the Braves, and we spoke about that at length already. But you see Jason Hayward going away, so there's a big gap there in that outfield. John Jay leaving, of course. And you have Steve Cishek, who really hasn't been able to find himself after that. It's a pretty solid year a couple years ago with the Marlins. Just really been erratic, not trying to rebuild himself there in Seattle. But they did bring in Jed Jerko. They re-signed Jonathan Broxton. They got Jose Martinez in the trade. Brian Peña as a free agent. Mike Leake was their big offseason acquisition. So they did lose a lot here, Steve. But again, it's very hard to say that the Cardinals are not going to be a team that can compete. Nobody saw them winning 100 games last year, certainly not myself. But again, this is a team that's able to be there, able to compete. And you got Adam Wainwright back all year. He saw what Michael Wacha did. You have Carlos Martinez, who had a fantastic season, 179 innings pitched, 184 Ks, ERA just over 3 in his first full season, 14-7. An incredible year there, and they kind of had to control him a little bit. But he, you know, this is a team that can still do a lot of stuff, even though they weren't really active this offseason. They let more of the talent go than they brought in my opinion.
Well, these guys know their personnel, and they know it really well. They know guys that they're going to be able to plug in when they lose a guy like, you know, a Lackey or a Hayward. They know that they got guys within their system coming up that can fill in right behind him. And then they do smart things like what they did with Colton Wong and signed him to a 5-year, $25 million deal, which is going to take him through his arbitration years and free agency. And again, that is why they're able to go out and sign some guys for extra dollar value, because they save so much on these other contracts like a Colton Wong. Otherwise, they'd have to pay him much, much more money in arbitration and free agency if he was able to get to that point. So, you know, it's just kudos to the Cardinals organization and what they do and how they run things. The development staff, developing players and getting them to the big leagues to help that big league club out. And what they do is they have a core group of guys who are experienced veteran players, you know, like a Carpenter, a Peralta, you know, different guys that are able to withstand the leadership and take these young guys underneath their wings, and then they add the pieces with the young guys who, you know, just continually add to their lineup and to the defense. They learn how to win under winning players, and it's a great formula with what they've developed over with the Cardinals, and, you know, a lot of teams are trying to copy it.
And even with the Lance Lynn injury, he'll be out for the season. That's obviously a tough one to lose. 175 innings last year, 167 Ks, 3.03 ERA, 12-11 on the season. The record doesn't indicate how effective he was. Definitely great since he became a starter for them a few years back. Again, you have Adam Wainwright back. You have Wacha, Carlos Martinez, Mike Leake. And the probably the biggest surprise last year for them, outside of the 100 wins, Steve, is Jaime Garcia. I mean, you could do a lot worse than this. And then if you have trouble there in that five, you have Tyler Lyons, who did a nice job last year filling in 60 innings pitched last year, 3.75 ERA, just 15 walks. I like that from a young kid. 60 strikeouts, so a strikeout per per inning out there for him. So, again, you have the anchor there, Adam Wainwright, who was terrific when he did pitch last year. And you have Stephen Biscotti, who was really solid last year, 305 batting average. A little banged up right now, probable for the start of the season. X-rays on his left elbow came back negative, so they're going to let him sit for a little bit, let him relax. But he's been batting 429 in 7 Grapefruit League games. Do with those stats what you will. I'm just here to give them. You do what you want with them. But they do have a little bit of a backup here. They have Brandon Moss for first base. Matt Holliday can play first base. That's if Matt Adams goes down again. But if you look at it, Matt Adams, 60 games last year. Matt Holliday, only 73 games last year. Only 4 home runs from Matt Holliday. Colton Wong had 11 home runs last year. Just, again, he did play 150 games, but just to show you how ineffective Matt Holliday was because of the injuries and back issues, this and that. But what I think is going to be an X factor for them this year, Steve, is Randall Grichuk. I like this kid a lot. 103 games last year, 17 dingers, 47 RBIs. He is their center fielder now. There's no competition there. He will be spelled here and there by Thomas Pham, who can play all the different outfield positions, but he is their guy. He's their center fielder for the foreseeable future. So I think this kid's going to have a big breakout year, probably in the 25 to 30 home run range.
Very possible. A talented young player who I think that gets his gets an opportunity to play every day will put up big numbers. You know, it's a credit to what he's able to do in that lineup, and he's going to be one to watch. I agree, and I think the loss of Johnny Peralta at shortstop will hurt this ball club. I think they may have to go out and get somebody till he's able to come back and man the shortstop position again. You know, having defense up the middle is extremely important in the big leagues, and you know, that's a big loss for them right there.
And not just defense and being a body on the field. He is expected to be out until July 1st at the earliest. Yadier Molina also telling him to just, you know, take it easy, do what the doctors tell you. 17 home runs last year, 64 run scores, 71 RBIs. It's hard to replace that from the shortstop position. But they do have some guys. Again, Jed Jericho, expect him to have a pretty big year. More of what we saw in his rookie year, not what we've seen the last couple. He will be fixed, so to speak. With the Cardinals, and it did have 16 home runs last year, so certainly not not lacking power for now, and of course in that big ballpark. Now, in the back end of the rotation, you have Trevor Rosenthal, you have Kevin Segrist, you have Jordan Walden, you have Jonathan Broxton, you have a bunch of guys here who can do a lot of things. Very nasty bullpen, again, capped off by Trevor Rosenthal, one of the best closers in the game right now, 83 strikeouts last year on 68 innings, 2.10 ERA, 48 saves. It's very hard to play against this team.
Yeah, a lot of power arms at the back end of their bullpen. You know, they're pretty much locked out, and when they have a lead going into the seventh inning, they pretty much keep it. So, you know, as long as those guys stay healthy, I think they'll be in pretty good shape. They might be able to lose one for a short period of time, but any more than one getting hurt and going down will really cripple the back end of their club, unless somebody's able to step in and you know, fill that spot if somebody does get hurt. But if they stay healthy, that's a pen to be reckoned with, you know, for the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings.
Mm-hmm. And now to shift to the last team in the NL Central. And to wrap up our NL Central conversation, we have probably the most improved team, certainly in the National League Central, in my opinion, but maybe in all of baseball, if you think about what they've added. Forget about the dollars they've spent, and it was a lot of dollars. Look at the talent that they have brought in. A team that won 98 games and is going to be even better this year, at least on paper, Steve. It's hard to believe somebody would have smacked me if I said that a little while ago. But you got Jason Hayward there in that massive contract. You have John Lackey coming off that phenomenal year. He showed a lot of leadership with the Cardinals, was instrumental in helping them get to where they got to, 100 wins. He was a big part of that. And again, a staple in the clubhouse. Ben Zobrist, Adam Warren in that trade for Starlin Castro. So they got rid of somebody. From what I've heard and what I've read, Steve, we've been trying to get rid of him for a bit, but the value just wasn't there. Getting Adam Warren is pretty solid there. I think the Yankees had a little bit of a steal there if they can fix some of the issues that Starlin Castro has been having on and off the field and focus on it. And they re-signed Trevor Cahill, who's been kind of a journeyman over the last couple of years, not being able to find himself, and then came in and he was on the staff. He was there in the playoffs. He was there in the World Series. I mean, they found someone there. You know, it's just a team that's very solid. The biggest loss that they've had is Dan Heron, probably as well as he pitched last year, retiring, which is a little strange because from what it looked like, he still had some time to go. But this is a guy who almost didn't pitch last year and had one of the best years of his career.
Yeah, I mean, this club here is primed to win right now, and they added the pieces that they felt that we're going to put them over the top with, you know, adding Lackey to the middle, to the back of the rotation, adding Hayward into, you know, the middle of the lineup. Even though his power numbers don't seem to be that big, he's more of a defensive guy with defensive runs saved, and they're hoping that he's going to be able to produce a little bit more on the offensive tilt than what he has. But, you know, obviously, you know, you have Rizzo and Brian and Addison Russell and, you know, Dexter Fowler signed back there after that deal dropped with Baltimore. So, you know, they're a very tough lineup, and they're going to have a very tough pitching staff, obviously, with Arrieta and Lester at the top end, and then, you know, you add Lackey and fill in the 4 and 5 guys. So they're primed to win right now. You know, Madden is in a good spot, and I think he's a very happy manager with the type of talent that he's got around him.
And they're primed to win maybe for the next 5 to 10 years if you really look at it. I mean, they got some youth on that team. They do have some age. Talking about Anthony Rizzo, 26 years old coming into the season. Chris Bryant, 24, 99 RBIs last year, .275 batting average, absolute stud. You have Miguel Montero hitting seventh in the lineup, and that'll change a little bit, but hitting seventh in the lineup there, a catcher who has power, not the guy who he was several years ago when he was an all-star. But when you have a guy like that hitting seventh, you're doing pretty well on that team. So the projected lineup, Steve, you have Fowler, Zobrist, so two switch hitters at the start of your order, which is always a great start. You have Anthony Rizzo, you have Chris Bryant, lefty-righty right there. You have Jason Hayward, another lefty. Kyle Schwarber, a lefty. Miguel Montero, a lefty. You have Addison Russell. Oh, by the way, they have Jorge Soler. They have Javi Baez, Tommy La Stella coming off the bench. I mean, this is – if they don't trade Jorge Soler, he's probably going to be the best and most talented guy on any bench in baseball. And, again, it's hard to keep that guy on the bench, and it's hard to keep him on the field because of all the guys that you have there. Schwarber was amazing in that postseason run. You just signed Hayward. You're going to play him. Dexter Fowler was your leadoff guy last year. It was great for them, over 100-something runs. And it's just an amazing squad that they've assembled there. Theo Epstein going for the jugular now. Once that World Series title now, he's going to break another curse, I believe. If it's not him, I don't think it can happen. That curse would be too strong. And then you have at the on the starting rotation side, a little bit more age there. You have Jake Arrieta, who had a historic season, Cy Young season, entering his age 30 season. You have John Lester, who's going to be in his second year with Chicago, going to be a little more calm, a little more confident, a little more himself. There you have John Lackey, rejoining the likes of John Lester, his old teammate, his old friend. You have Jason Hamill, who was quietly solid last year. You have Kyle Hendricks, who I expect a lot from. I believe he can take that next step. That bullpen's the only thing that kind of worries me a little bit if you look at it, Steve, but they have a swing guy like Adam Warren who can start, who can do long relief, who, again, could do a lot of things for him. You have Pedro Strop as your setup guy along with Justin Grimm. And you have Hector Rondon as your closer. And he showed that he can do a couple things last year, Rondon. But again, this is all about performing this year. This team is built to perform and be huge during the regular season, in the playoffs, if you remember what they did last year. But they need to be able to perform during the regular season as well this year. With all the expectations, with all the stuff and all the antics and all the fun stuff on and off the field, they got to be able to perform. And it looks like this team wants it bad if you listen to the way they speak.
Yeah, Joe Maddon will have this team ready to go, just like he did last year. He's one of those managers who keeps things light and really puts an emphasis on just winning baseball and doing the right thing. So I see them coming out. I see them being just as good on the field as they are on paper. I see the bullpen, maybe having a hiccup here or there, but they're going to be just fine. They got power arms at the back end of their bullpen, and in Strop and Rondon. They'll be able to settle things down, and I expect big things from this ball club.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Rondon at the back end of that rotation, obviously the closer role, 69 strikeouts last year, 70 innings pitched, 1.67 ERA, 70 saves, and a guy who's helped lock down and create some sort of stability in that bullpen, which they haven't had in a long time. If you really remember, have any sense of history of where the Cubs have been the last several years, losing teams or otherwise. You have Pedro Strop, who had a great season. 2-6 record doesn't indicate that, but 81 Ks in 68 innings, 2.91 ERA, did fill in for 3 saves. And you have Justin Grimm, who they got a couple years back in that trade. I believe that was a Matt Garza trade, but it was a trade with the Rangers. 49 2/3, 1.99 ERA, 67 strikeouts in 49 and two-thirds innings. I want to reiterate that. Three saves last year as well. Then you got some other guys who can give you some starts, like Travis Wood and Adam Warren I mentioned before. So you have a lot of talent here. Kyle Hendricks, 180 innings pitched last year. It's going to be a little more hands-off this year. We're going to see some stuff out of him. And all the other guys they have on this team. This is a very exciting team to watch. So Jake Arrieta's breakout historic year last year. Probably not going to be the same this year. It's very hard to replicate that. It's very hard to even get one of those types of years. But, you know, they don't need him to be 22-6 to be a playoff team this year. And I think that having all this talent around allows them to relax a little bit, but not too much. So with that, we'll wrap up the NL Central, which means, Steve, we have one division left. And we might have an old friend of yours come and help us with that. We might get Pedro Gomez to be able to do that. I don't want to obviously that's a spoiler, but I don't want to tease too much because we're not sure 100% if he'll be able to come on next week to do that. But it is somebody that we've been in talks with, and we love having our guests on because they provide a different insight, and we get our news and our information in many different ways, and obviously with your insight from having played the game, Steve, that unique analysis makes the show so special when you add in all the special guests that we've had on the show. So, again, big thank you to Jerry Krasnick of ESPN.com and of Baseball America for coming on before to talk about everything NL Central baseball. One thing we didn't speak about, Steve, of course, about the Gustkacz thing, so I don't know if you were going to use that as your last lick, I'll yield the floor to you for a last lick.
I am not going to use that, so you might be a happy man about that. My last lick is actually going off topic, and I'm going to the NCAA tournament, which is going to start this week. Selection Sunday was yesterday. They picked the teams. There's some bubble teams that got a little bit squeezed out, Monmouth being one of them, having big road wins all year long and getting knocked out. But besides NFL playoff time, this is one of my favorite times of year, not only because it's spring training, but the NCAA tournament yields a lot of excitement, a lot of upsets, a lot of Cinderella teams. Always look forward to having a good time in the clubhouse. Everybody roots for their, colleges that they went to, and there's a lot of smack and a lot of trash talking going on. So we enjoy that very much. But, the top seeds, there's a lot of teams I think that could win the tournament this year. You know, there's North Carolina, Oregon, Kansas, Michigan State, Villanova, and Indiana. I mean, there are many teams out there that have a very good opportunity to be the NCAA champion this year, and I'm looking forward to the ride the next 3 weeks as spring training winds down and I get to watch some college basketball and not only enjoy baseball but enjoy basketball as well. So everybody out there, pick your teams, fill out your sheets, enjoy the rest of spring training, enjoy the NCAA tournament, and I'll probably have this as a last lick 3 weeks down the road when the NCAA team is crowned and take you on a wild ride. But, that's my last lick for tonight. Just enjoy the NCAA tournament and have a lot of fun with it and root for some upsets because it's always fun to watch these teams play and watch an underdog come through and beat a team that may have an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a great last lick there, talking about something we don't often talk about unless it's really this time of year. Again, I'm not one that follows college sports all that often, but I am a big stats guy. I do watch highlights and all that kind of stuff, and there's just been amazing just a slew of amazing games there. You're talking about going overtime, extra overtime, three or four overtimes. You have guys winning and tying the games with, I don't want to use the word heroic, but it's amazing what they're able to do under the pressure that they have. A lot of these guys are playing in what could be their last game and really stepping up and doing big things. Some of the guys will go on to be in the pros in the NBA, and some of them, obviously, just their playing careers might be over at that point. But you see everybody pouring it all out there and doing some great things on the basketball court to represent their school, represent themselves. So with my last lick, I bet you believe or think that I'm going to talk about the unbelievable record-setting 48 consecutive home wins by the Golden State Warriors, a team that's destined to potentially break the 72-10 record by the Chicago Bulls of the 90s. I'm not going to talk about that. You might think I'm going to talk about Maria Sharapova testing positive. I'm not going to talk about that. But what I am going to talk about, and I'm going to talk about it very mildly, is what Bryce Harper said the other day, and I alluded to it before. I don't have any problem with him wanting to be the guy, the face of baseball. I have a problem with the way it's gone about and the fact that baseball is a little bit of a different game. And I do understand he wants to make it a little cool, make it a little hip. A lot of guys took offense to it. Goose Gossage, who's probably not the best guy in those scenarios, given his firebrand nature, to be able to explain away the reasons why Bryce Harper may or might not be wrong, which is all opinion. But to me, if you're going to talk the way you want to talk, you want to be that face, you do it in a bunch of different ways. You do it on the field and let people crown you as that. I have a problem with people crowning themselves because it's something that, everyone talks negatively about millennials and things like that. And things like this are partially the reason is that everyone's quick to say, I'm this and I'm that. You're not this and you're not that until other people might see you that way. You might think that in your heart, and that's great that you feel that way, but you can't declare yourself something. It's like somebody declaring themselves kings and then they get laughed at. You just don't really do that. People gave LeBron James the name King James because he was incredible talent. And Bryce Harper is probably going to be, it's probably going to go down if he continues at this pace at his age with his ability. He's probably going to go down to one of the greatest baseball players of all time in a very difficult era, post-steroids era, in an era where people are still huge and running incredible 40 speeds and all the other stuff that goes along with that, the workout regimens, .. He's going to go down as one of the best players of all time. I do have a problem with people crowning themselves this and that. Let the game, let your ability speak for itself. Run out every single play. Be a leader on that team. Don't get in people's faces. Do it the right way. That's what baseball is all about, in my opinion, because you're going to see him get brushed back a lot when you start bringing yourself out and talking about yourself like that, and you better back that up. And if you think having a 40 home run season is going to be enough, you're wrong. If you're Bryce Harper, now you have to go and hit 44, 45, 60, whatever it might be. You have to continuously get better and work hard. One season does not a Hall of Famer make, in my opinion. Granted, I never played professionally, but I know enough about the game to have the respect for it and do it on the field, let that speak for it. That is my last speech. Not a scorning, not a cajoling, not a castigation. It's just my opinion on the scenario. I figure I'd do it in a way that maybe Goose Gossage meant to do it with a few less expletives there. He also had some choice words to say about Jose Bautista, which we've talked about before in that bat flip, but that's a conversation for a different day. Right now, that wraps up the show. Steve, a great one. I know you've been doing a lot of stuff with spring training, doing everything that you're doing in the Cleveland Indians system. We appreciate that. Thank you for coming on, of course, and doing the show, even though you're tired, exhausted, and you can't wait to get to sleep. And I'm not allowing you to do that because I keep talking.
Yeah. Oh, not a problem. Great last lick. I think everybody understands that, your peers are the ones who should give you all of the endorsements and accolades that somebody should receive, and it shouldn't be on their own terms. So, great last lick. Just want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you again for joining us. Derry Krasnick, thank you again for joining us and giving us your insight. And, we got one more division left. We're looking forward to finishing that up and finishing spring training up. And getting on with the regular season. So join us next week as we continue to move forward and bring you guys another great show. Thank you guys for listening, and have a great night.
Yep. Before you know it, we'll be Steve and I will be sneezing on the show because the allergies from the fresh cut grass, which we love. We love the smell of it because it means baseball time. We'll gladly take the sneezing and the red eyes if we could watch baseball regular season again, because we love the game so much. So thank you all for listening, joining us, and sharing our shows. Thank you to Jerry Krasnick once again. As Steve said, stay tuned to carsaintthekid.com for more details and who we'll be having on our show next week and in future shows. Thanks again. Have a great week.